Thank you very much for the kind introduction, although I didn't understand what was said. And my kind regards to Sudwind for having invited me here. I think very exciting to see such a pleasant crowd for this event, and thank you very much. I'll take you to the West African perspective on sustainable energy for all, what really sustainable energy means to developing countries like countries in West Africa. But before I do that, I just do a brief introduction of what West Africa is. This is a map of West Africa. See, 15 countries in West Africa with a population of over 300 million people. And these 15 countries, you see that less than 50% of the people have access to modern energy services. And this really is what tells on the economic growth. Economic growth has not been the best. We've been actually at the bottom of growth for the past few years, and that is not the best way to go. And you see that the energy situation, as I said, we have some of the lowest energy consumptions in the world. Energy efficiency is still not embraced, and the impact of climate change actually we also beginning to feel it like everybody else. If coming here, I came practically from Ghana, and if you were in Ghana, I think you would not like to go to Ghana again. The temperature that I realized there was a lot more different from what I used to see. And every year, the temperature keeps increasing. It's not the same any year, and every year it gets even worse. But look at the energy production scenario. You see that most of the energy consumption in the region is biomass energy, mostly for cooking purposes. Up to 70% of the population relies on biomass for cooking purposes. As said in earlier speakers, what we call sustainable cooking actually is one of the biggest issues that need to be addressed. And the other part is power generation, and mainly from fossil fuel. So you see up to you go further, you see it coming to the power generation. On the power generation, most of it is from natural gas and some hydro. And that is actually most of the power generation scenario in the region. So we still rely on mostly natural gas, particularly in Ghana, and Cote d'Ivoire, and Nigeria. These are the three biggest countries in the region. And they rely mostly on natural gas power generation. But upon all this, I can say less than 50% of the population have access to what we call modern energy services. But you can see the region on this map, most of it is still green. Apart from fossil fuel supplies, we also have substantial renewable energy resources in terms of bioenergy. Most of this area has enough bioenergy resources that can be harnessed in a more sustainable manner. Sure, we harness it now, but not in a sustainable manner, because it is either we slash and burn agriculture, or we just go on logging for timber for export, or what I call firewood and charcoal production in an inefficient manner, and even the cooking process, not in the best of ways. So we have it, it's used now, but not in a sustainable manner. If we could move more to a more sustainable manner, we could it could be more beneficial. Solar, we have some of the highest solar radiations in the world, up to 5 to 6 kilowatt hours per meter squared in the region, and that is some of the highest radiations you find, and this whole area is very suitable for solar and have very high radiation levels, also untapped. If you go further, hydro, we still have up to 25 or 23 gigawatt of exploitable hydro unexploited in this region, lying mainly in this area that I've shown. And to a lesser extent, wind in the coastal areas. We still have significant wind speeds recorded in this area all the way up to 7-8 kilometers, what we call it, meters per second of wind recorded in most of this area. So all these resources are resources that could be tapped, but yet untapped. But why have these resources not been tapped? sure, there have been so many reasons. Our energy policy, actually, in the past, has not focused on exploiting renewable energy resources. It was just energy from whichever resources, but not focused on renewable energy resources. And that is one of the reasons. Secondly, people were of the understanding that renewable energy resources or technologies were not matured or they were expensive. So that interest was not there, and therefore people did not embrace them. Sure, the cost of renewables, take it 10, 15 years ago, they were actually expensive. And people just felt that, sure, we don't have money to put on, bring energy to the people, why do we go for the most expensive options, which were renewables? Sure, today the situation is not the case. And this, sure, this is a slide that just shows the energy access situation per country in all the 15 countries. You see that apart from Cape Verde, this slide should have come earlier, apart from Cape Verde with over 90% access, most of the countries, you can see Guinea-Bissau, Sierra Leone, Liberia, all of them with access rates of less than 40%. And it's even worse in the rural areas, where you see access rates of up to 6-7% in some rural areas in some countries. So that situation is totally, I can say, unacceptable. These were some of the things that led to the creation of ECRE back in 2009, when the heads of states of the ECOWAS region took a decision to create the ECOWAS Center for Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency. This happened at a time that the region actually was facing very serious energy crisis. Not that we do not have generation plants, we have them, but the companies, the generation companies, could simply not afford the fuel bill anymore. So, well, you had the plants, but they are not running because there's no fuel. They cannot buy it. And the countries did not have the money to buy it for them. That's when the governments came together and said, no, we have to look at alternative sources of energy. They may be expensive, they may not be matured now, but we just have to pursue that course. And environmentally, we are being affected. So how long are we going to wait again until we address this issue? This was actually the main reason why ECRE was established, to address the energy access issues using renewable energy and energy efficiency at the same time. Sure, we did this with the support of the Ocean Development Agency, ADA, who was really gracious. Also, governments of Spain and UNIDO were very supportful to get us started. So, and since we started, our focus has always been addressing those barriers that we identified earlier for the energy access situation or not moving on renewables. And that is, first, the policy gaps which existed in the countries. There was no consistent policy and focused policy alternative energy sources. One, capacities. Capacities were not focused on these areas, and for that matter, the know-how was not really there in terms of renewables and energy efficiency. And the understanding that we had that these were technologies not matured and expensive, actually lingered around, and people did not show much interest in them. And finally, financing. Sure, this was the renewable energy plants should be accepted. It's acceptable that they were more expensive because you are buying your fuel and your generation all up front, as against a fossil fuel plant where you buy the generation and spread out your fuel cost. So definitely, it turned out that they were more expensive, and that should be understood. But this was what we were not ready to accept. So we were actually directed to focus on these areas and see how can we address these things jointly. So one of the areas we focused on was the policy area. So working together, all the 15 countries, by 2013, July in Abuja, Nigeria, we got two policies, a regional policy for renewable energy and a regional policy for energy efficiency, all adopted by the heads of states, and they were really very happy to do that, which showed that, yes, now we are moving forward. And since then, we've been working with all the member states towards the implementation of these policies. Let's see some of the targets that we created in these policies. In terms of energy efficiency, we said we're going to eradicate incandescent lamps by 2020. Sure, up to now we still have a lot of them. So we're working on that, and by 2020, for sure, in the region, we are not going to have any incandescent lamps. We also went on energy efficiency in industry, in the distribution sector, in other sectors. I'm surprised the time has gone so fast, so I'll be a little faster now. Then coming to renewables, we also set targets for renewables for both, and you still have targets. You see that we say by 2020, we should have about 29% of our generation coming from renewables. And by 2030, we should have, I think, almost 45% thereabouts generation coming from renewable energy sources. We even created targets for off-grid solutions. Why do we create targets for even off-grid? In our region, we still have countries like Liberia, Sierra Leone, Guinea. These are countries, Guinea-Bissau, Gambia. These are countries that do not have a single transmission line after 50 years of independence. So if we say we're going to have transmission lines running across these, all parts of these countries in another 10 years, it's practically not feasible. So we say, while we focus on large grid-connected generation plants, we should also have some targets for off-grid. So the communities that are far off the grid, the foreseeable grid in the nearest future, should also have some sort of energy to engage in economic activity. So you will see it in improved cooking and fuel switching to LPG are all targets have all been set, because cooking is also part of the most important part of the game. And technology-wise, this is actually by technology what we projected to do. I will not go too much detail into this. I think the presentation will be available for everybody. So, and you will see it further description of what is being done over the years from the adapted policy, where we are going to stand by 2020 and where we'll be by 2030. You see that most people would have gotten connected, and a lot of solar and biomass power plants would have been coming up to actually support existing plants like hydro and conventional fossil fuel plants. And having set these targets, we started working with the member states. And at this level, every country adopted what we call the National Action Plan for Renewable Energy, National Action Plan for Energy Efficiency, and also an agenda for sustainable energy for all, using the targets of sustainable energy for all by 2030, to ensure that by 2030, everybody has access to some form of sustainable energy. And this was the whole process we carried out, and you see that, from the conventional side, power generation, transmission, distribution, everything coming together, and you see from renewable, the contribution, and then energy efficiency. All this, every country tried to identify these three components of the sustainable energy for all, or SDG 7, putting them together to create the national targets. So at the end of last year, every country set its target. So what we do is we set out to develop what we call the investment prospectuses. So coming out with identified projects to then meet these targets. And we have created timelines of up to 2020, and from 2020 to 2025, and 2025 to 2030. Every country, now you say these are your targets. Which projects, be it private or public, do you think have to be put together to attain these targets? That's what we're working on now. We have started working with the first 8 countries, and we are very confident that in another 6 months' time, we have the results for the 8 countries, then we'll work with the next 7 countries. So, but by then, every country would have got a set of projects that will meet the targets that they have set, and the projects will be into 5 different groups. The first will be renewable energy projects, energy efficiency. We have different pipelines. We have for improved cooking, we have energy efficiency, and then institutional arrangement. policies and regulatory frameworks that need to be put in place to ensure this, because we're looking at, when you look at the estimated cost of the investment to get these targets implemented, it is beyond the ability of any government in the region. So we're actually counting strongly on the private sector. But do we have the legal and regulatory frameworks that would promote private sector investment in our energy sector? In most countries, not yet. But sure, we are picking up gradually. So you see that the policy for what we call grid-connected renewable energy, we have seen what we call it, countries adapting feed-in tariffs, others going to net metering. And for now, what most people are looking at is IPP tendering and auctions. And it's really proven well. If most of the private sector investors were looking at over 20 cents per kilowatt hour for electricity, the auctions have brought the prices down to between 6 and 8 cents per kilowatt hour already for solar PV, and it's coming down for the other technologies. So you see that in the past 3 months, you see what we call in Senegal, they have already commissioned 220-megawatt solar PV parks. In Ghana, they've commissioned one. They're already constructing 2 more under the auctions. And you see in Burkina Faso, in Mali, and in Nigeria, they've signed IPPs for 1.2 gigawatt of solar PV, and which will all be implemented in 2017. So we see that there's a rapid pickup as the situation improves. So I'm rather going back. And so these are the countries, the IPP, what we call auctions, already going on in which each of the countries, you see them. So, and finally, we also have a network that working with investors. How do we bring the projects and the investments together? So which we organize annual investment fora to get this happening. And we also develop what we call a solar corridor with IRENA and other partners to see how can we use what we call our regional leverage to come out a giant, like 2 gigawatt or solar PV corridor that will attract investment and make the cost a lot lower. This is the way forward in developing this corridor. I think I'm almost at the end. Sure, a regional approach actually gives us the possibility to reach out to so many countries at a go. In West Africa, we work on 15 countries, and that is, I can say, over 300 million people, almost half the population of sub-Saharan Africa we work with. So if we take this regional approach in other parts of actually Western and Africa, we could reach the other parts of the region. There's already one in North Africa, and I know Eastern and Southern Africa are also working toward regional cooperation. So we're now creating a network of regional networks and regional centers where we exchange ideas and we learn from each other how we go about doing things. So, and that is a very good experience. Thank you very much, and see you.